time now to look through the window of baseball with Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle, brought to you by Marvin Windows and Doors and Truett and White, the professional builder's choice. Bruce, how are you today? Nice to have you with us.
Hey, Bruce.
Good. Hey, guys.
Yeah, it's jumping out here. It's Giants Dodgers. You were out here last night. Maybe some of your impressions of the game last night. It was a historic game in many ways, but not the way the Giants wanted to see it.
Well, no, I mean, that ballpark tends to marginalize or minimize some pretty powerful big league hitters, but I don't think Puig is among them. I
mean, right.
He was just thriving, just hitting balls up the gaps, using the speed, turning it on, really impressive. You know, D. Gordon, too, once he gets loose, it's like watching Willie Davis from years ago or any of the great, really fast guys. It was a dominant performance by the Dodgers. They were stinging the ball all night, really. Greinke was great. And it really sort of capsulized all the reasons the Giants fans should be concerned about the Dodgers. And then, you know, now we get Kershaw, which is the biggest one of them all. Who knows? I mean, as depressing as that was, the Giants could pin a 4-1 loss on Kershaw for reasons we couldn't predict right now, so it would be interesting to see what happens. I just wish this was a day game as well as tomorrow. I really don't get Dodgers and Giants playing Saturday and Sunday nights.
No, not well, down there they do it. It's always been that Saturday night down there, which I guess I got used to. But up here, you like to see day baseball. You really do. It's
A
beautiful town for it. And the day is just perfect, as it turned out today. All right, now, there's a new Giant, two new Giants today. It seems like every day you find someone on the DL or someone coming up. Andrew Susak is here from Fresno. Bruce, you and I have watched him before. But the big one is Jake Peavy coming over and has this tremendous record against the Dodgers over the years. And Bochy had him, and he's one of those bulldog kind of guys. What's your impression of Jake Peavy coming in?
Well, I mean, I've always liked Peavy. He's a real bulldog out there, great competitor, good control, which he still has. He's had a rough year with the Red Sox, but who hasn't? You know, but the Red Sox are just bizarre this year. You know, Bogarts, the great rookie, has struggled. Everybody's had their problems there one time or another. But I like the deal for so many reasons. It doesn't hurt them much financially. They still have Susak and Kyle Crick. Peavy's obviously one of the top three starters if he's right, and probably will. I would expect him to move into that kind of a role. I don't think they gave up much. I've seen a fair amount of Escobar, most recently in the Futures game on television, and geez, everybody who came out there was just throwing 95, 97. Oh my God, he's got a splitter to change, and Escobar looked pretty ordinary against those guys. I think he'll. He might pitch in the big leagues for somebody, but he's a number five guy at best, really. And Hembree, I've really liked what I've seen of him, but I kind of think maybe he should have been up by now. His high fastball sometimes will come back to burn him. He can't always keep it down, and his high fastballs have been rocked around a little bit on occasion. I think they're a little bit worried about his command. He's a guy who could develop into a big league closer, but I think the fact that he's moved a little slower with the Giants than they hoped might indicate that he's not an A1 prospect.
Yeah, I always wondered why he wasn't up here, why Gutierrez and Machi kind of knocked him out, because a guy throwing 95 or 96 on the path should be here by now. But I agree with you. Hey, Bruce Jenkins is with us, but here's the story of baseball. They go out and, get Peavy, and the Dodgers are in town. The Giants get pasted last night. Tomorrow night it's ESPN, national TV, and who gets the ball? Jake Peavy.
Yeah, it's fun. So funny. Sabian's great. I mean, I heard him on the radio just a couple of days ago, and he was very discouraged about the way the trade talks were going. He didn't sound like he thought anything could get done, but, you know, the guy never lets up. And all of a sudden, boom, you know, Peavy comes into the picture in a manner that he was ready to pull the trigger on, because he said more than once, I'm not going to make a bad trade. And he didn't. And he got Peavy here in time for tomorrow night. I mean, you got to love that. So, the Giants fans can say what they want about Sabian's deals over the years. Obviously, not all of them have worked out, but the guy works hard, man. He goes after it, and he wants to win the whole thing every year. And very hard to argue with that.
Absolutely. Bruce Jenkins, KNBR 680. Well, we were kicking it around earlier, Bruce, so wondering if you think Sabian's done. What do you think?
Well, he's got the second baseman. for what that's worth, who knows how that's going to work out. And he's got his pitcher. I mean, I think he's probably still looking to get a right-handed bat, an outfielder, if he can. He still has Crick, and Susak's not going anywhere now. I mean, he's the backup catcher to Posey. Yeah. And depending on Sanchez's condition, that could last a while. So it's pretty much, would you be willing to trade Kyle Crick for a hitter? And if that were to happen, it'd be a very good hitter because Crick's pretty well regarded.
Yeah, I think you got to get the lineup back. I think you got to get Belt in there, Pagan back in there. You have Ugla. And you let these guys play. If that's not good enough, so be it. I just don't think I think you got to get the injured guys back. And if they're not coming back, then you got to make a move.
Yeah, I mean, it'll go right down to the wire, as far as, judging where Pagan's going to be. And it's going to be hard because there won't be a definitive word on him on the 31st, next Thursday. So we'll see. But I still think in the back of his mind, I think Sabian feels at least to shore up the bench. The bench has been weak all year and is even weaker now. So if not a guy who's going to start in the outfield, somebody who can sit on the bench and deliver some hits off the bench, and that wouldn't cost you a Kyle Crick. You could make that a lesser deal.
Bruce, today, the writer and broadcaster goes into the Hall of Fame today. They go in, Eric Nadal and, of course, Roger Angel. And you and I have done shows over the years on Hall of Fame weekend, and maybe some of your thoughts about Roger Angel. And I don't know if you know Eric Nadal. He was born in Brooklyn. He was a longtime broadcaster for the Rangers. He goes in today. So any thoughts on either one of them, I'd appreciate.
I got to know Eric a little bit. I did a big piece on John Miller for the Chronicle a couple years ago. And, from the Texas years, I talked to Eric. And of course, he was talking mostly about how John – how he recognized John's talent right away and how John helped him. And Eric's a great guy and a real institution down there, sort of the way we look at John Miller or the Cardinals look at Jack Buck or whoever. He's just one of those guys in that town. We'll always have our reservations here because Bill King isn't in. But if you're in Texas, I mean, Eric Nadal is a guy who should be in the Hall of Fame. Roger Angel is just... He's probably the best baseball writer who ever lived. I've got all of his books. Got to know him a little bit. I had a very memorable dinner with him in Winter Haven. I was there to stop by and cover the Red Sox, and he was there. And I guess he didn't have anything at all to do for dinner. But we're sitting there, and there's Carl Yastrzemski across the way in this nice restaurant in Winter Haven. I'll never forget that. It was magical. I mean, being able to hang out with truly one of your idols. I mean, Roger Angel's pieces in The New Yorker were so magnificently done, and in the books as well, that you just, you wonder, should I even be writing about this sport? My God, this guy he's so wonderful, such a nice touch, lovely touch, and relied on his words and his observations more than just throwing a quote after quote, most of which don't amount to much more than I was swinging the bat pretty well. He was a true wordsmith and a treasure.
He went to one of the great stories he did was remember the Yale game with with Ron Darling, and was it Frank Viola mm-hmm. on the other side? I forget.
Yeah.
I think it was, but I know it was Ron Darling. And the coach of the team was Smokey Joe Wood, or he went to the game with Smokey Joe
yeah.
Wood. And it was just one of the classic baseball stories of all time. And
he could seize on an episode like that and just write forever because his. So many great thoughts and would come into his head and interpreting what he was seeing and the experience that he had. I mean, he goes way back to seeing Ruth, and he's a New Yorker and saw great New York players way, way back. Tom Verducci did a really nice piece in Sports Illustrated, I think either this or last week, that fans can either pick up or access online. It'll be very worthwhile to get an idea of the experience this guy has.
Bruce Jenkins here on KNBR 680. Go ahead, Bruce. Did I cut you off?
I was just going to say, he said a great thing, Marty, about instant replay and how, and I'm sure you can relate to this, he said there are things in my head that I remember that I only saw once because there was no replay. I saw it, I digested it, and I've never forgotten it. And he said now when you see things 3, 4, 5, 6, 100 times, it's still a great play, but it loses some of that magic, that your mind could preserve, which I thought was a great comment.
Yeah, no, he's right on it. He's right on it. Bruce, Pat, go ahead.
Well, I just really enjoyed Bruce's 3-Dot Lounge column today, and you can you definitely dedicated quite a chunk of it to the critics of Tony La Russa going into this class of the Hall of Fame, and I was wondering if you could kind of expand on that for the listeners today.
Well, I mean, everybody knows that when La Russa managed the A's, that was one of the prime ball clubs in the major leagues that was benefiting from steroids. It was everywhere. I mean, they had Canseco and McGuire. We know all about this. And that's regrettable. It's regrettable that Dusty Baker managed Barry Bonds. It's regrettable that all these guys managed guys that that we're using. But to me, to say, Brian Gumbel is the latest, to say that, he should have done something about it, for him to have turned a blind eye to this, he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, which is just unbelievably ridiculous. I mean, I've covered baseball for so long and been around clubhouses, and the idea of a manager ratting out his players, turning them in for their private habits is just unbelievable, especially in a winning context. These guys were just steamrolling everybody. What's Tony La Russa going to say? Now, hold on a minute. We got to get these two guys out of here. Everybody was looking, I don't know about looking the other way, or if they were just looking straight ahead. This was the game as it existed at that time. A lot of people could have done something about it, but nobody did. That includes the players' union, the commissioner, trainers, even most writers who are, there's a huge, tremendous watchdog element to writers, especially right now. It's never been better. But there was very little of it going on then. And to single out La Russa, he should have done something about this. What the hell could he have done?
Boy, I guess people always look for topics. And with Twitter and all the media, people are always looking for something. But what a weekend. It's Giants-Dodgers Hall of Fame weekend. The weather is good. And I can't wait to see Kershaw and Vogelsong tonight. Like you say, if they won every game, they'd be 300-0. And it doesn't work that way. Something happens all the time. Hey, we had Patty Hunter on earlier. I don't know if you heard her. Her dad was a writer for the Herald Examiner who went into the writer's wing of the Hall of Fame.
Sure, Bob Hunter, yeah.
Yeah, and you remember Bob Hunter just because we heard her on the air, and you certainly know about him, maybe a little bit
about
him.
Well, yeah, I grew up in L.A. during his prime, and, of course, the L.A. Times with Jim Murray was king, or was perceived as such, but the Examiner had a fantastic sports section year after year. Bob Hunter was part of that stable, Mel Derslag and Al Malamud and
wow.
my friend Lyle Spencer, and they really went after it. They prided themselves as being the stuff that was really on top of the news and breaking the most stories, and Bob Hunter was that guy covering the Dodgers, a little bit of Angels too, and she mentioned, I did hear some of her, she was there for, and he was inducted. And the one time that I went to Cooperstown was in 99 when Bob Stevens went in, along with Orlando Cepeda. But I had a special place in my heart for Bob, and we all lobbied very hard for him out here. And, Bob was the institution of the San Francisco Chronicle. And I kind of replaced him. They were sort of like stepping in for Lou Gehrig or something.
Yeah.
That was a magical day to be back there and see Bob and listen to him, his speech when he got in.
Boy, 89, Red Shandings, Al Barlick, Yastrzemski, and Johnny Bench, and, of course, Bob Hunter.
Great, great class. Yeah, the class that I witnessed go in, Cepeda went in with the Veterans Committee, but it was George Brett, Nolan Ryan, and Robin Yount. I mean, it was a good year, good solid year.
Not bad. Hey, Bruce, thank you so much. I look forward to talking to you tomorrow. We'll catch up on some Hall of Fame stuff and, of course, what happens tonight. So I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, Bruce.
You bet. Talk to you guys. See you then.
All right. Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle.
Yeah,
wow.